Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So we've got to the last week of the season, and at this point, you might be asking yourselves the same questions as last year and the year before, and probably the year before that. It's Saracens bloody hell. How are they so good? What is it that has made them the number one club in Europe? On Saturday, they face Exeter Chiefs in the Gallagher Premiership Final at Twickenham. They're favourites to win that too. How, why, and why such sustained excellence? So, in search of the answers, in the noble quest for truth, like every decent journalist, I've come to the pub. It isn't a normal pub, though. It is the HQ of Wolfpack Lager, the young brewery founded by and run by two of Saracen's most faithful servants. So, I'm delighted to introduce Alistair Hargreaves, former captain, 5 years a player?
5 years, yeah, there and thereabouts.
5 years a player. It's a handful of Springbok caps in between, numerous trophies lifted. Business partner Chris Wiles, 10 years of Saracen?
10 years.
Did you score more tries than Al?
I did. 70 odd. Thank you very much.
So he just pipped you, Al?
Just narrowly. I think I managed to amass one.
Oh, for those who aren't getting the joke, Al's a lock and Chris isn't. Chris, you retired last summer.
That's right.
And then you missed it so much that came back.
Had a very strange comeback week.
Tell it. I mean,
well, we're actually sitting at this table at the bar when the phone started ringing, weren't we?
Yeah, I got a call from Brad Barrett, actually, who I said on quite a few occasions he's not one to chat on the phone. He's a lovely guy, but he's not someone to call up and ask how you are and, you know, what's going on. And he said, "How's the body feeling?" And I said, "You know, I actually feel okay. I'm actually doing all right. You know, I play a bit of five-a-side football." And he said, "Do you fancy playing on the weekend?" And when he said that, I was like, okay, well, he always likes taking the piss out of me anyway. So I was like, yeah, I'll play.
On the weekend, so how many days advance warning?
This is now Monday. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that's never going to say no to any kind of game. Thinking like he was just taking the piss, as I say. and puts the phone down. Next thing I know, I've got Phil Morrow calling me, who's our sort of, I don't know, what would you call him, our sports performance director, saying, "Chris, I hear you've been playing some five-a-side football. I hear you're fit." I'm like, what is going on here? So I was like, yeah, I feel good. And then he puts the phone down. Smalley calls me. And he goes...
Accent, please.
Smalley is Mark McCall, the director of rugby.
Yeah. He's like, "Chris, how do you want to play a game on a weekend?"
Oh, not bad.
He does not sound like that. That is shocking.
I've tried to do this accent every time.
It's getting worse.
Anyway, one thing led to another, and I find myself at the Saris training ground on a Wednesday trying to get through, you know, our tough fitness day or training day. And even on the Wednesday, so I train Tuesday, train Wednesday. Even on the Wednesday, I'm expecting to turn up to the training ground with all the boys laughing their heads off, thinking that I was actually going to play a game of rugby on the Saturday. And then the week just rolls on, and next thing I know, I'm on the pitch playing against Sale Sharks. First thing I do is run straight into Solomona. Look, as a winger, I didn't have the most finesse as a rugby player. My game was based mainly on running straight at people and hoping for the best. So I did that against him, and he held me up like a little teenage boy. Turned over the ball, and I thought, this is just going from bad to worse. But in the end, lasted 70 odd minutes, set up a try.
70 minutes?
Yeah.
Off a few five-a-side games?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't think you've highlighted the fact that you had not only been retired for 6 months, but you've been running a brewery.
Yeah.
So it's from on the piss to on the pitch in about 4 days flat. So It's a hell of an effort.
Yeah,
you've resisted another comeback since, or actually the call hasn't come in?
The call hasn't come in.
Okay.
Well, the second part of that story is I was actually due to play the next week and against Leicester, and Smalley pulled me aside at the end of the game and said, "Chris, you know, when do we have to let you know if you're available?" And I said, don't worry about it. You know, not a big deal. Just let me know. Thinking full well that he's going to call me up. And he called me up to tell me that Lazowski had come back from England and would play the game. And I literally felt like I got dropped all over again. It was horrendous. And then Lazowski went on to win man of the match on the wing. So,
did you get paid for that? Because at Wolfpack, we didn't see a cent.
I got paid, maybe a little bit.
Okay, well, yeah, you owe us.
So you've got a part in this final on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm invested.
You played a role. Okay, we are also joined, but I would just love to hear about when your comeback plans are, but that's probably not a very funny conversation to have. Sorry, insensitive, but that was Will Fraser, who you retired summer 2017, 2 years ago now, and you were part of the golden generation. Can we call them that? Or you can't?
I was the Yogi Duckling, but I was part of that group.
Okay, well said. The other guys aren't interrupting and putting you right. They're just nodding their heads.
You're right. It's the first honest thing you've said.
So, Will, you came up through the academy with the Jamie George, Owen Farrell, Jackson Ray group, who are at the forefront of it now. And unfortunately, injury scuppered much of your career. Keen listeners can go back and listen to a full podcast on that from about 18 months ago on the Ruck. You're still part of the system as well, as in you still work for Saracens. Explain.
Yeah, so I run a business for the club called The Saracens Way, where we essentially look at our journey as a club from being, quite frankly, pretty rubbish to now being pretty good, and how everything that's kind of created that journey is transferable into any other organisation in any walk of life, because it all focuses around the culture, the people and the values. So we run workshops with clients, anyone that's prepared to listen and learn something new. So yeah, so I run that, which has been pretty fun, pretty interesting, very different to chucking the ball around for a living. But it's nice to still be involved with the club and still see the boys as much as I do.
We'll talk about it in a minute, but the culture thing that you mentioned and how Saracens do stuff is something that people from outside the club roll their eyes at. One, because it's frustrating because it beats them, or it's so successful. But two, that is it hot air or is it not hot air? You're actually out there making selling it as a business, as a concept beyond a rugby team.
Yeah, I think that the thing is, we've all been very, very fortunate to be a part of it for a decent amount of time. And I think it's one of those, what's lovely about it is that it's not until you're really a part of it that you really fully understand what goes into it, if that makes sense. And I think what we do when we go and speak to clients is kind of talk around, look, this is what we try and do, this is how we try and manage the performance, manage the values, all this kind of stuff, but be very open and honest and say, look, we still have our own issues. You know, there's no such thing as a perfect culture in any organisation. So we have our own problems we've got to deal with. And I think that human aspect to it, I think, is what really appeals to people. Because yes, obviously the boys are doing phenomenally well on the pitch and we have this incredible culture, incredible environment, but we still are no different to any other organisation and we still have problems we have to deal with and have to solve. And it's how you go about doing that that really is kind of the unique bit about the club.
Let's say we're in the Wolfpack bar, North London, NW6. So kind of we've got to big up the brand a little bit, haven't we? I mean, we need to talk about the lager as much as we can from your point of view. So okay, there's two beers you do. Wolfpack Lager and Wolfpack Pilsner.
Correct.
And I wonder if we could discuss the beers and marry up what Saracens player is closest to either of your beers. So Wolfpack Lager, an untamed lager, is our alpha male lager, you say. I'm just reading from the spiel here that I got off your website. Untamed lager is our alpha male with growling hop character and a robust mouthfeel. Brewed to bold Bavarian methods and barely reined in by sweet melon and a snarl of pepper. Now, if that's a Saracens player, who are we talking?
Not quite sure who's got the best mouthfeel out of the boys.
Well, I say Bavarian, you'd go Justin Milk.
Alpha male?
Alpha male, hairy.
Yeah.
Untamed, yeah.
Untamed.
Not a bad shot.
He'll be here Friday night, by the way.
Can we carry on? Because we want a current name as well.
Well, it's also about, I think, what will we design? What will we brew for specific players? I mean, if we had to brew a beer for Jamie George, for example, what would that look like? Probably be sold.
This is the whole podcast. We're going through the team.
It'd be sold in a stein. I know. It'd be larger than life.
No. It would be something. We'd have to create a new glass for Jamie George. Be the girthiest glass you've ever seen.
It'd be a fishbowl.
Yeah, it'd be a fishbowl. We'd drink out of a fishbowl.
I like it. Quite a, you know, a strong beer, mid range. 4%, sir.
No, I'd be strong for, you know.
Heavy.
He doesn't mind seeing a few back.
He gets on with everyone, doesn't he? So it would be like quite a universal beer.
Absolutely.
Like.
Table beer.
What's an Owen Farrell beer look like? Because I thought he might come in as the alpha male with
I think it looks like a glass of water, probably. I don't think Owen's the most consummate professional we know. So he certainly picks his moments to have good times. But I don't think there'd be he'd be lending his name to a beer anytime soon.
No. The Maro Itoji brew.
Well, it'd probably be the best beer in the world, wouldn't it? Yeah. it'd win all the awards every single game. Man of the match, you know. It'd be easy.
You also, your other brand is the Wolfpack Pilsner. I don't even know the word, which as a journalist I probably should, but you describe it as a Sarsy bastard.
A Sarsy bastard, yeah, we got a little bit loose with our marketing.
I even Googled it, and it doesn't come up as slang for anything.
Sars is the type of hops that is used in Czechoslovakian Pilsner.
All right, foolish me.
Yeah, so there it is, as an education, you know? Sitting with the beer connoisseurs, we've certainly tasted enough in our time. Yeah. It's a
Sarsy bastard and an easy drinking pilsner.
So easy drinking.
Clean, light, and brewed in true Bohemian style.
We're talking about me there, aren't you? Clean, light.
Wow, would you concur?
Easy going. Bohemian.
No, I'm not sure about Bohemian.
Yeah, you know.
That could be cocky, though.
Could be cocky.
That could be Neil DeCock.
So do you think our beer is just targeted at old South Africans?
Old Harry.
Justin Malk, Neil de Kock.
Old Harry South Africans, yeah. At that.
By default, you are an old Harry South African. So
you know. we talk about Jamie, something easygoing. It's probably something like that. Jamie would be a good guy to have around the table to consume a few pints of Pilsner with, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, fair to say that if Saturday's final goes well, then you'll be seeing the aforementioned and many others in this bar on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Saracens are so close to our story. We're so passionate about the club. You mentioned the culture. And the reason why I started Wolfpack is because we wanted to have a job that we loved, like we did when we were playing rugby. So we invested time and energy into starting it during our careers. And we've tried to bring the values and ethos of Saracens and the Saracens Wolfpack into our business. So the fact that we still get to enjoy celebrations with the boys when they do win things, is really fantastic, and it's
quite an old boys culture, isn't there?
For sure.
I mean, I know that lots of former Saracen players went to Newcastle for the European final. I mean, you said that a bunch of the old South African players are coming back for this weekend.
Well, do you know, we were just touching on it earlier, it's actually, particularly in the last 10 years, those that have been affected by this culture in a positive way now have such a strong feeling towards the club.
Yeah.
So obviously there are lots of older Saris boys prior to 2008 who feel passionately about Saris. Of course they do, and they feel their connections. But I think there's something post that 2008 journey. A lot of those guys that will be coming over from South Africa and who just there's that connection. It's not just hot air. Actually, they've bought into the culture. They've been personally affected by it in a positive way. So now they want to still be part of that.
And they've bought into it and built it from the ground up, right? And I think you mentioned, you know, some people get a bit sick of this, the media snippets. You see, oh, Saracens are going on a trip, you know, they're going on a holiday, and you know, it's all this hot
air. These are the booze cruises that you do to exciting places cruises around the world. What?
Team bonding.
These are the team bonding occasions.
But the principle behind those is quite simple, and it's that if you take people out of their working day-to-day environment, they actually have different kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
So they really, really work. And yeah, you see the hot air, but culture is bloody hard work. You know, it's something you've got to be on top of every single day. So I feel that's what keeps, you know, these ex-players, you know, part of the community. Is they look at that side and go, I was involved in that. You know, part of the success that the guys are, kind of reaping on the field now. We're built years and years ago through these amazing characters that we've had as part of the club.
Okay, so seriously, if I like to imagine that most other Premiership players will be tuning into the Ruck this week to get their catch up on what's going on in the world of rugby.
No, they won't.
Not when they see the Saracens the Saracens edition on their
head. It's a rough crowd today.
No. They'll be in Greece or something, won't they?
They'll be on the beach. Yeah. But if they were listening. Thanks for disabusing me of that. If they were listening, they would be rolling their eyes and going, yeah, but we love our club too. We think our club's great as well. And what's your answer to that? Because why how is it different, Saracens, to other clubs? You do go on these infamous trips where you get pissed together and have a great time, as you just mentioned, and that's great. But it's more than that, clearly.
I think the thing with those. And it's hard for me to really cop on other clubs because I was fortunate to have my entire career and still now at Saris. But I think the trips are amazing and they have huge benefit to us as a group of people. But they're almost kind of the cherry on the cake, if you like.
Yeah.
So much that goes in on a day-to-day basis, working around, getting to know each other better, building levels of trust, living and breathing the club values, caring for each other, then putting all that onto the training pitch, into the gym, into a match. Actually, those trips are the cherry on the cake. They really just bring the whole bit together, if you like. If you just went on those trips without any of the groundwork before, then you would not get the benefit from them that we are fortunate to get. And this is when I said at the very start, the culture is such that until you've really been a part of it, you never really appreciate how much goes into it. And even if we sit here and try and describe it to you, it doesn't do it justice. And a lot of players that join the club, you know, there's been a couple that joined in recent years who have turned around and actually gone, I heard about what you guys have done, but actually being part of it, it's so much more than anyone outside appreciates. And I think that's the brilliant thing about it, from our point of view, that it's...
Can you separate out, to answer the question I introduced at the beginning, why Saracen's so good, can you separate out what you've just been talking about, Will, the environment and that caring and getting to know each other from the fact that the coaching's clearly excellent because you do get a lot of great players, but I can't think of many who haven't got better since they've been there. To the fact that the recruitment's clearly good, or I mean, what's your answer to it, to why they are good, or is it just the whole melting pot of all that stuff?
One thing I was just going to add, and I'll go on to answer that question in a second, what Will touched on earlier is that we don't always get it right either. And it's just the fact that I think every coach, every person who's involved in management and the players always considering how they can improve. So it's continually trying to assess what they're doing and then seeing where the improvements can come, both in the culture, the players, the recruitment, everything. And I think I've only been at one other club really properly, Northampton, in the year that got relegated. So I can't also, I'm fortunate enough to be at Saris for a long period of time. But I wonder at those clubs how much they honestly do look into these things and don't just pay it lip service.
Can you three possibly give like one example of something like that, or a change, or something that you did, or?
I think one of the biggest examples you can give is going to your point. Can you separate the coach and the recruitment and the environment? Is that actually the whole point is that they're all one and the same? So what are we actually recruiting players against? Yes, from a rugby point of view, they need to be a certain level, but then we're recruiting against our culture and our values and our environment, and actually trying to recruit people that are going to fit into that and add to it and help evolve it. So I think, you know, you look at when we signed Skelts, Will Skelts, he came over on a 3-month trial.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, he's a monster of a man. He's obviously an incredibly talented rugby player. It was a trial for him and his wife to make sure that, yes, they're moving halfway across the world. Do they like the weather? Do they get on with the other couples? Do they like St. Albans, where the training ground is, where they live?
Yeah.
Because if we were come and they hated St. Albans, they didn't get on with the lads, then Will can't give himself to the club. He can't become the player he's become because he's constantly got this niggle in the back of his head thinking, oh, actually, I'm not enjoying this. I want to be back home. I want to do... So when you look at that as kind of intertwining it all, we are recruiting very good rugby players, but better people that are going to fit into the club. And then the coaches as well, the same. The coaches, you have an environment and culture almost gives you criteria to hold yourself accountable to. And I think recruitment, how we play, how we manage conversations, why we go on the trips, all of that is all accountable to the environment we're trying to create and trying to evolve and trying to improve.
After the European Champions Cup triumph in Newcastle. The conversation in the media turned a bit to how good are Saracens compared to the Saracens of 2 years or 3 years ago, whatever. And lots of media people, and we love these sort of conversations. Saracens now better than ever. Do you think that that's the case?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the guys do get better and better.
But hang on a sec, none of you three are playing for them anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly why they're so good, yeah. Well, I mean, even on the weekend, so there was a moment for me when Mara made that line break, and he threw the most ridiculous dummy I'd ever seen in my life, and then got the offload away to put Ben into the corner. And I just thought to myself, 2 years ago, he's running straight into that fullback. He's going to hurt him.
But you'd have done that, Al.
Of course, I would have stepped him. But that's just me.
That'd have been your second try.
That'd have been my second try. Would have doubled my tally in one fell swoop. But I think these players you mentioned Will's generation, they've grown. They started as kind of young kids in the academy. And now these guys are top international players. And they are driving the behaviours, the culture, the standards in that club. And they get better and better because they're so invested in the environments. And it's got to a point now, you mentioned coaches. Our coaches are excellent. So I look at all the players that have benefited from this great coaching environment that we have. But chatting to Al Sanderson last week, he was saying, well, the players are taking more and more control of even the technical coaching aspect.
Yeah.
Because they just know the club so well, and they're such students of the game. So they get better and better each season, absolutely.
And that leads to the next question, which Milo also asks, is when's it going to stop, or how would it stop? What would stop this club's incredible progress? Because Saracens have been winning for 6 years now.
Well, I personally think that if the environment and the culture doesn't evolve, that's when we'll get ourselves into trouble.
It plateaus.
It's easy to say, well, we've got the winning formula, just do things the same way for the next 10 years and everything will be okay. But culture has to evolve as well, depending on the players, about how they change, how they develop as people, what their expectations of the club, of the coaches, of the people around them are. So I think, again, you have to have a very close eye on these little things that happen every single day and notice that, or acknowledge the fact that, although we talk about this culture time and time again, it has to evolve to be relevant and continue evolving for the club to be at its best.
Okay, can you try and answer that another way? So I wrote that question, so what could stop them? And then in question marks, I've got Owen Farrell having a career-ending injury / Mark McCall going to coach England or Ireland. So if you took one of those two away, do you think that
I think this is the whole reason, because if you look at Saracens of old, kind of what we call the pre-revolution stuff.
The dark days,
yeah. The thing with that was the exact problem, was that we had 11 directors of rugby in the space of 10 years, we were buying in these huge name players, but no one was really adding to what we're doing because there was no identity, no culture. So the whole kind of birth of the culture was to make it sustainable.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who comes, who goes, the environment lives on, that sustainable aspect. So obviously we lose Owen, that's going to be a huge, huge blow. We lose Mark, that's going to be a huge, huge blow. But then it goes back to that whole recruitment process, is that the person that's going to come in and fill their shoes, whether it's a young academy player or someone we bring in, will fit into this environment as a bloke, which means they'll add to this environment as a bloke. So in terms of, for me, the biggest thing that stops it is, as Al says, if we stop talking about the environment, if we stop looking to evolve it, and off the back of that would mean we start bringing in the wrong people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That will slowly erode what we've got. So I think it is, for me, almost exclusively about the people within it.
Chris, can you see anything that would be beyond what Will said that would stop it? Is it the environment that continues it?
No, I think the foundations have now been put in place that you can pull people out and it will still operate. I mean, obviously losing Smalley would be massive in one sense, but then you've had the consistency of all the coaches underneath him that understand the message in the club so intimately that I think it would continue in the same vein as long as they're still pushing themselves and trying to evolve, as we've just mentioned a couple of times. You go back to the Exeter game, so as a second last game of the season, penultimate mm-hmm. game, and you look at the younger players coming through who represented Saracens on that day, and you look at that and think, well, looks like we've got a lot of good players yet to come still. And that's the hard work of the academy. That's the hard work of now the shift in mindset of making sure that, not shift in mindset, but understanding there was this golden era. That's fantastic. Well, now who's the next era? And how are we going to bring those players through? And I know every club will look at that in the same way, but now that the foundation's in place, I think Sarri's able to bring in the correct people, the correct young players who they think can then grow in this environment. So it's just, you know, you're putting all these pieces together. I think the answer to your question is, I think with making the right decisions, Sarri's will continue to be a big club. And why not? How big have Leinster been for... I mean, when would you say Leinster started their so-called level of dominance? Where would you put a year to that?
Well, I think they built and then they seemed like successful sports teams. They're cyclical. That's how we regard them. You know, even like Manchester United did 2 decades or something, but the cycle ran out. I mean, that you're still in your first decade, I suppose. Mm. So Leinster to me seemed to build, fluctuate, and dip a bit.
So everyone else, that's considered a dip. But they still won one of the European Cups. Yeah. They're probably still in the playoffs with the Pro 14. So in reality, it's not really even a dip. If you think about it, that performance is still there. It's just maybe because of a couple of decisions in a particular game, they didn't quite make it over that final hurdle. So I think this is the point Vaz is making, is actually, why should it ever happen? There's no reason why it should ever
happen. Well, I think the challenge is, well, there's two challenges. One, for as Al, you say, if you keep evolving, then it can perpetuate. The other challenge is to the other 11 clubs or all the other clubs, is can they... I mean, if Alex Sanderson, the head coach under Mark McCall, if another club who was unhappy with life said, listen, we think that Saracens know what they're doing, and persuaded him with their checkbook to come, could he replicate at another club what he's got at Saracens?
I assume that that's what Guzzi's trying to do, Paul Gastaud.
Exactly,
Quinns,
yeah.
And he'll definitely bring those lessons that he learned at Saris and try to find a culture that fits Quinns and fits those players in that environment. And I like what Will always says when he talks about the Saracens' way, is our way is not perfect, but it works for us. And we're not saying to everybody, oh, you should all go do this or emulate Saracens. But we've been on top of it now for such a long time that we know it works. And to answer your previous question, I kind of think the biggest challenge will be what happens when we do lose. You know, are we still able to fly the flag of treating people the best, you know, being best mates, communicating well, being positive every single day? Because there will come a point where Saracens will lose 5 games, 6 games, 7 games.
Well, that happened halfway through last season, didn't it?
And this was the exact conversation they had.
Yeah.
We're saying there were rugby issues that obviously needed fixing. The fundamental reason we went on to this meeting was after the Clermont hammering at home.
Yeah.
6 games lost in a row. What they spoke about was actually culturally we started to drift away from what's got us here in the first place, in terms of making memories, spending time with each other outside of training, all this kind of stuff. So actually what they said going forward was we need to start getting back to that. Yes, there are rugby things we need to fix and we'll look after them, but we have to start getting back to culturally who we are and what we're about. So, you know, the following game then we played Clermont away, a stadium where even with and we had a few injuries that week, with the best team we had and a vain rich run of form, we never come within 10 points of them, and we only lost by 3, and we had one. But
your point is that when you were asking how do we mend it, you didn't say, well, our defence needs to change, or we need a different shape in an attack, or that our line out drill's got to be different. You said we've got to look at the environment.
We've been on this run, and the point you make in terms of when, like Al says, and it is a big challenge when you start losing, naturally conversations are slightly different to when you're winning, and the finger might get pointed a bit more and all this kind of stuff. So it's actually how strong can you live this environment now? So we're losing. Actually, how we talk to each other, how we treat each other, shouldn't change. But what we're talking about, we can't get too focused on the performance just because we're winning every single week now.
Yeah.
The focus has to be on both the performance and the culture. We can't get too carried away with one, because if we do that, we neglect the other.
Sure.
So I was played through that. Those, I don't know how many games we lost. I remember missing 16 tackles against Clermont at home.
You weren't on the opposite wing to Raka, were you?
He was on the other wing, and I tried, and he managed to weave his way across the pitch, and I managed to probably miss him 5 times.
You sidestepped him 5 times, but he had the ball.
So I actually lived through that process, and again, it goes back to the fact that at least we're able to have very meaningful conversations about why things are not working, and we're able to refer back to our history and our background and the foundations and go, how are we going to correct this? I know that plenty of other clubs, having lost 6-7 games, will sit in a team meeting and say the same things. but perhaps they don't have the same foundation of a bunch of guys in a room who've all been, who for the majority, because of the consistency, have been at that club through the thick and thin, can sit there and have honest conversations with each other. And it goes back to my earlier point. We're not paying these things lip service. At least we're then coming together constructively. And by the way, through that process, there are a couple of things I don't think we did right and some things we did do well. And then we ended up winning the Premiership eventually. So we're not always doing it perfectly. Not all of the conversations were great. Some of them were constructed in a really good way. Some of them weren't. Some things were brought up that I thought didn't really need to bring up. But overall, we got through it because there's a foundation of everyone being together through this process. And that also comes through consistency of players. If we'd had, if last season we'd had 10 that had left and 10 that had come in, that conversation after six-game losing streak would have been very different, a lot more divisive, a lot more difficult to get through.
Can I ask you to sort of paint a picture of what it would be like for to be in this gang that you've all been in? If you're, say, Jack Singleton, who's arriving next season, actually, where he'd been in before anyway. So, but if you're a new player coming in next season, you arrive for pre-season, you start playing games. Who are the personalities around you that will first kind of draw your attention, who you want to impress, who you might feel a little bit intimidated by? I mean, from the outside, we think, oh, Owen Farrell's probably scary as shit, and you don't want to do anything wrong in front of Mark McCall. But that's just easy to say from the outside. So, from the inside, what is it like inside there, and how does that sort of that tapestry of different characters sort of weave?
It's an interesting question. I think everyone plays their role, and guys like Owen will drive standards continuously, and he will ride guys if he feels that they aren't up to a level they need to be in terms of their detail or the work they're doing off the field or their effort. But I think there's an understanding of, you know, how to communicate to all people, to new people, to old people, how to treat each other really well. So I'd hope that a new guy coming to the club would be embraced, I'm sure he would be embraced by everybody, and he'd have 25 conversations on that first day with different people that are all along the same lines, you know, that try to educate and teach him the history and just kind of teach a guy like Jack how important it is to be part of the Saracens environment and to live up to the ethos that we've created.
I think the big thing is, and it's been across the board for the last decade, is that we want people to be a part of our club.
Yeah.
Join the club, you're joining for a reason. We want you to excel with us. So whatever happens, whatever conversations happen with whoever, the only reason they're happening is because that person wants to make the person that's talking to you better. Whatever that conversation is. So you said about Owen's biggest thing is he does drive the standards massively, but that's because he wants people to get better. So all he wants to do is help people be better rugby players. All he wants to do.
Well, that's because he wants to win himself, isn't it?
Everyone that wants to win.
Yeah.
So, but no one's any different. Everyone's the same.
Yeah. We want to win, and we win by having better players around us.
I think for me, what is a huge learning curve for me was arriving from South Africa and spending my first couple of months at the club and realizing that the coaches really wanted to understand me, what made me tick, how to treat me differently to everybody else. You know, there wasn't this one-size-fits-all mentality. It was, okay, this is how we treat Chris. This is how we treat Will. This guy needs a bit of love. This guy needs a kick up the pants sometimes. You know, Wiles likes to have three beers on a Wednesday. You know, whatever. Marrow might want to have it be on a treadmill on Wednesday night. That's fine. It's kind of inclusive.
Yeah.
There's an effort to understand what makes every single person tick.
Which players in there would surprise you with their personality then? Who's going to make you laugh in the dressing room? And
there are a lot of characters, aren't there? From the George Cruises, you know, a guy that's probably his media persona is probably quite stoic and quite quiet. But it's like any group of people. There's some amazing conversations and banter and fun that happens behind the scenes. You've got guys like Alex Good, we saw last week, made a bit of a splash in the media. These are just good people with great personalities, and away from the rugby field, they're all very, very different but very fun bunch of guys. It creates it's a really nice team to be part of. That's how the job's so good, because you do go to work with people you genuinely like.
Yeah, and whereas
nowadays is just I got to work with Wilesy all the time. It's tougher, you know.
You're stuck. You are. Yeah, you've made a decision.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Which of the next generation? So we saw in the semi final Nick Tompkins in his 100th game. So it's not like he's new, but that was kind of his big standout game from a public point of view. Anyway, who would you say we should be looking out for? Is Max Malin's going to be as good as Owen Farrell? Joel Kapoku is the other one who's has a big reputation coming through.
It's hard to say, as Walter said earlier, we're very fortunate that we've got an incredible group of young lads coming through. And that's the thing, you say, it's really interesting because you say from a public's point of view, last week was Nick's kind of almost breakthrough game, but it was just 100.
Yeah. And you've been seeing him play for years.
He's been phenomenal for us, yeah. For 100 games, yeah.
Just on that, I think that probably goes away to answer the question about what happens if, you know, somebody leaves. Well, Brad's been arguably the best player of the decade for Saracens. He's phenomenal. Brad goes off in a semi-final after 30 minutes, tears a hamstring. You think, well, hang on. Yeah. This could really dent the team. Out pops Nick and scores a hat-trick. Happy days. Easy.
But it is, and it's so true. And I think in terms of picking any one player out, genuinely, it's really difficult to do that. I mean, there's a handful of lads there that will go on to form the absolute core of Saracens in 5 years' time, 10 years' time.
Ben Spencer certainly had a stellar season. I think he's got into the reckoning, and his star is shining really bright at the moment as well.
Nick Ezekwe's going good guy.
But again, you wouldn't put Ben in that. Ben and Nick are established first-team players. They're not.
This is the thing, and again, I suppose it goes to show. Also, what goes on behind the scenes that people don't necessarily appreciate with the club is actually we have these, we generally have some of the best players in the world. Yet you've got guys like Spenno, like Nick, who've played over 100 games for the club, and in the press and in the public, people assume it's their 20. Actually how much the squad gets used within a season, within a campaign. And then when you talk about people then getting injured and people having to step in, these guys have been in European semi-finals, they've been in finals, they've played the big games. So when you tie that all in with the environmental stuff, then actually, again, they fit in pretty comfortably.
When the media talked to Mark McCall in particular, but after big wins and that, the sort of question that he really hates is when you talk about Saracens as a dynasty, you know, you've got a generation of victories ahead of you. You know, you're set here for years, and in the back of people's minds is this like a
pause for delivery? This is a business, man. We can't do podcasts all day.
So as we speak, Chris Wiles is going off to do his day job.
Accept the delivery. Yeah, that's
okay. So the beer's arrived, which disappointingly means I've got to go in 15 minutes. No. My question is we go, this is like Manchester United or Liverpool in the 70s or 80s or you know, the famous West Indies or whatever. As a group of players, when you're actually playing, and you can answer this now because you're not, when you're playing, do you poke your head up and have a look around and ever go, you know, this is extraordinarily special. We do stand comparison with teams that I've just mentioned.
I don't think they do. We certainly didn't when I was playing. I look back at it now and I have that same reflection. I go, wow, this is something great. This is something that I'm so proud to have been involved in. But I think as soon as you start believing your own press as a player, as a coach, you know, that's when the wheels start coming off. So I think Mark does a great job in making sure people remain grounded and go that, yeah, well, we played a good season, we've played well, we've won a cup, but it starts again on Monday, because all we have to do is take our foot off the pedal for a couple of weeks, and that comes crashing down.
So those boys in there, they won't be stopping to pause and admire themselves.
No, I think they make a big. We always made a big deal about celebrating the victories, making memories, and making sure that, like after the championship final, even though there was a game next weekend, the guys went out and they made the most of that moment. But then there comes a point on the Tuesday where you say, okay, cool guys, that's done. We park that and we've got to move on. You know, and it's sometimes quite difficult because you get this huge, huge high, you know, when you win games, win tournaments. But if you can't bring it back down to ground, back down to earth pretty quickly, you can upset yourself in the long run. And that's what happened when we lost to Exeter after winning the Champions Cup 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these ones where there's no denying we've got a very special group of players and we're in a very special moment in, you know, our lifetime as a club. But Mark, the year we first won the double, the following pre-season, Mark kind of stood up in front of us and said, the funny thing with successes is that the more successful you get, the less time you have to enjoy it, because the sooner you want to start getting back on the wagon and working again. So yeah. I think in terms of putting your head above the parapet and looking at, oh, we could be this team, we could be that team, as Al says, the second you do that, the whole thing starts to fall apart, because the focus has to be on that.
Yeah.
Yes, we've done this, it's brilliant, but what can we do now to make ourselves better? Mm-hmm. What can we do tomorrow to make ourselves better? If you start thinking we're going to be this club that's going to have this 20-year, 30-year, whatever it is, then you start looking so far ahead that you'll fall at a hurdle in between now and then. So I think the reason we can keep grounded is because the focus is on the process.
Okay.
I think winning the Champions Cup for a second time was quite an interesting moment, because everybody kind of came back to pre-season and it almost felt a little bit deflated in a way, because the first time around it was so fresh and new and exhilarating, and then you won it the second time and there was almost this expectation, the sense of relief when we won it, rather than euphoria. Oh, okay, we've won it, we were expected to win it, thank goodness we did it. And the guys are like, hang on, it's about more than just winning those big tournaments. It's about, you know, every single day making the small moments count and cherishing just being in that kind of environment every single day. It was quite a weird moment for the guys.
And okay, a couple of questions I want to ask you about perception. So a lot of the time with Saracens, there's a bit of an us against the world. You can't criticise the style of play now, but as the team progressed, it was a very defence-based team and not the easiest on the eye. And it was easy to criticise Saracens because of that. And always with the response from the club was, well, we're tight, we're together, it makes us feel stronger, a bunker mentality, you know, us against the world type thing. Is that an attitude that you kind of are forced to take on? Would you not prefer to be admired and loved and respected, or do you generally not care?
To be honest, the most important thing is that the people within the group admire and respect each other.
Yeah.
So if people outside think we're boring or whatever, then quite frankly, as long as we know what we're doing, we believe in what we're doing. So I think at the start, you are right, you know, those first few years, it was a very dull way of playing. I think we played three phases, we hadn't scored in three phases, we kicked the ball, and then just back our defenders to win it back over, turn it back over. But I think the reason we had that is because the focus at the start was on creating this environment.
Yeah.
So we put most of our eggs in that basket, and then we really simplified the rugby, because if we're trying to really turn this club around from a cultural standpoint, and trying to play this really expansive technical style of rugby, they're two very hard things to marry together. So the rugby was simplified because the focus on building this environment. Then as the environment grows, you start to layer the rugby on top. Where you see us now, where we have this incredible environment and we play this incredible brand of rugby that we score a hatful of points. And I think that's part of this evolution piece that I was saying, is actually this is where now the two sit together. So the focus initially was culture, and then the rugby kind of caught up, and the rugby potentially overtook a bit last year, and now they have to be.
Okay, Chris is back. What was the delivery, Chris?
Shout out to Gypsy Hill, Hepcat, beat Nick for the bar. Some delicious beer. Some delicious beer for the Wolfpack Bar, Queen's Park. Come here, baby. Blood, sweat and beers. www.wolfpacklager.com.
We haven't done enough product placement.
Yeah.
Right, to do this honestly, I've got to ask you one salary cap question. When the salary cap thing comes up, in the media or Premiership Rugby raise questions about whether Saracens are within it or not, what is it like when you're within the club? Because I imagine as players, if you're working hard and you're being successful and you're achieving, you would feel horrified if you were generally undermined by the knowledge that your club hadn't been playing by the rules without you knowing it. So How does the do the club talk to you and explain what's going on? Do you talk to each other? Do you go and spit and speak to the management and say, listen, we need to know, or do you just trust and go on? I mean, how to live through that.
It probably goes back to your last question, which is, how do you keep inside the bubble? You know, so what are the bits of information? And that's what the guys talk about on the squad, is what's in the bubble? You know, what are the things that matter and what's just white noise?
Yeah.
There's always a lot of white noise around the salary cap. There's a lot of noise around, you know, different things that Saracens do, the trips and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
What are the things to take seriously? You know, so I know that there would be complete transparency from the club side to the players, and they would have had some, you know, some very good discussions internally, led by the leaders of the side and the coaches, and it's a very transparent environment. Of course, we aren't privy to the details of the investigation, et cetera, et cetera. And personally, as an ex-player, I think the club has been pretty open and upfront about where they think they stand on the matter. As a player, you've got to get on with your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got a contract in place. You've got an agreement with the club. Your job is to play rugby. Let the business guys sort out the business end of things. You know, so if it can distract the guys if they aren't kind of focused. But if they stay in that bubble, they'll probably just say, guys, let's acknowledge this exists and let's make a conscientious effort to stay away from it and focus on what we have to do, which is play rugby.
But will there be a moment, you said there's some transparency, will there be a moment where it's discussed and the management addresses it?
Of course. I mean, yeah. This is a very close team. You can read all the hyperbole all over every single, you know, website. Whenever Saracens is mentioned, there's always some dickhead in the comment section that says, oh, this and that, and who paid for this, and who cares, man? Like, Saracens are going through the investigation. We'll all see the results of that. And internally, the guys all know where the club stands on matters like that. So I don't expect that would be affecting the guys too much. I don't know if you guys agree.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, let's move on to the final Saturday.
So is there rugby this
weekend? There is a final on Saturday, yeah. Saracens are favourites. Do you three all think they are deservedly favourites? Can you see it going the other way?
I think Saracens are favourites and I can't see them losing.
I think Exeter are a phenomenal team, done unbelievably well, but I think with the way the season's gone, especially the last couple of months, I think it's Saracens game to lose.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Exeter, I think they've been fantastic, not only this season, last season as well, and just in the Premiership in general. They're so consistent. They seem to have their own culture, which is phenomenal. But Saracens are just playing ridiculously good rugby. I mean, that how they took Gloucester apart after, you know, an early try, and then 44-7 up after 50 minutes was ridiculous. So, and they relished these big opportunities. So I can't see them losing this.
Yeah, and I echo what the other two guys said about Exeter. Like, huge amounts of respect for them and what they've done, their story and how they've created their culture. But something about the firepower of Saracens right now, when you think of the quality of players across the pitch and when they're gelling like they are, it's just too strong.
And they've been in those situations so many times now.
Well, I was going to say, Saracens in May, in the month of May, you know, you peak in May, you get to finals in May, and I can't think of a poor game you've played in a final.
Being a winger, not having to do much in some of the finals that I've played in, and you watch some of the players, you literally are watching on the wing, the kind of players that are running around doing crazy things.
Cheers, man.
I can appreciate that Exeter definitely have those calibre of players, but not in the same depth and not with the same experiences.
Would you be prepared to put a score on the final?
No, I think I know which direction it will go. Back the boys, man. We're just back the boys.
Back the boys.
Okay, well, so just to wrap up, because we have got to the end of this, and thank all three of you, Owl and Chris, for coming. You're quite confident that you'll have the Saracens boys round here on Sunday afternoon to celebrate a victory.
Someone needs to drink the beer, right?
Yeah, they'll be here either way on Sunday.
I'm not so confident we'll be able to get them out, though. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Thanks, boys, very much. This was The Ruck, a Ruck special on Saracens. Thank you for joining us. The final's on Saturday, and we'll be back soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com code program.